This is an ABC podcast.
They're very, very strange animals. Sperm whales are toothed whales. They're odontocetes. And the very large, very strange head of sperm whales is an extreme adaptation to make them better at echolocating.
They're quite different looking than other large whales in that they have this really large square head and almost wrinkly skin. And they can grow to over 18 meters in length and weigh over 50 tons.
Imagine a whale that is shaped like a bus-sized cheese stick. It's round in the head. It's stubby with a slim little bottom jaw that opens up like a vehicle boarding ramp to a top secret military blimp. The jaw, it looks too small for the whale. And the whale looks too big to be real. And it makes sounds that are sort of small sounds in a way. But these are deadly clicks. I'm Anne Jones and this is Off Track, the ABC's nature program. For the next half an hour, we're going to be going on a trip through the Southern Ocean with some of the coolest and weirdest sounds that I heard in 2018. These sounds, recorded by the Australian Antarctic Division in the Southern Ocean, have never been heard like this before. One of the scientists behind this research is Dr. Eleanor Miller, a marine scientist.
So sperm whales are pretty magnificent animals. They're the largest of the toothed whales, and they have quite a bushy blow when they breathe, and it's angled to the left because their blowhole is on the left side of their head. And that's unique to sperm whales. They also have a really large tail fluke, which can actually be used to identify individual whales because it's covered in small markings and notches and big scallops, which are unique to that whale. And with sperm whales, they often show their whole tail when they're diving, which not a lot of other whales do.
They spend about 80% of the time underwater.
Dr. Brian Miller is a marine mammal acoustician with the Australian Antarctic Division.
When you see a sperm whale at the surface, the main thing that it's doing is breathing. It's just recharging its oxygen so that it can make another deep dive and continue foraging. So 80% of its time is spent underwater. So they're not seen that often. And in particular, in remote regions like the Antarctic, that can make them very, very challenging to study because they spend all of their time underwater.
Sperm whales can travel really large distances. The females generally are found in the warmer oceans, in the breeding areas around the equator, but larger whales tend to travel further distances and can go as far south as Antarctica.
The males are actually a lot larger than the females. Female sperm whales get to be about 12 to 13 meters in length, whereas the males can be 18, 19, possibly even 20 meters long. So the males are larger and can tolerate the cold better because of their larger size. And it's believed that the males head to the poles, head to these high latitude cold waters because there's abundant food there for them.
Why are they called sperm whales?
I guess some of the early whalers might have been a little bit confused. They were taken for their oil, and their head, their large head, is actually full of fatty, waxy oil that is white in appearance. Perhaps some of the early whalers mistook that for its sperm, and so they were called sperm whales. But it's not sperm, it's fat, and it actually has incredible acoustic properties.
The fat in its head.
The fat in its head. It actually focuses sound like a lens, just like we have a lens in our eye. The fat in these animals' giant heads focuses the sound so that it can echolocate more effectively. We have some pretty good information on how sperm whales make sound. Sperm whales have an organ at the front of their head called the museau de singe, or the monkey's muzzle, pardon my pronunciation of the French words. This organ at the front of their head is also, in dolphins, is called the phonic lips. It's a very muscular organ, and they force air through this organ, and it makes a clapping sound. So the two lips, air is forced through it, they separate, and then they return back together to make this clicking sound. The phonic lips are located at the very front of their nose. The sound actually doesn't travel right into the water from there. It actually travels backwards towards the skull through the spermaceti, that waxy oil, reflects off of an air sac in the skull, and then out through more of this fatty tissue in their head. And the fat is serving to focus that sound, and actually, like a horn, it's actually increasing the intensity of that sound. So it actually kind of comes out an order of magnitude louder after traveling through its head than had it just emitted the sound directly into the water in the forward direction.
The sperm whales are a really important part of the Antarctic ecosystem. They're one of the largest predators down there, and they're known to eat a lot of squid every year. And even though they're that important, there's not a lot that we know about them, especially in the remote waters of the Southern Ocean.
And that's where the scientific use of sound comes in. But to listen for the whales, you need to have ears in the ocean. Mark Milnes works for the Australian Antarctic Division as an engineer, and he builds the sound recording devices that listen to the whales in the Antarctic.
We've got three glass spheres. They're something like 12 millimetres thick. So one of them houses the electronics, and then there's two more spheres above that for flotation. So the whole thing's as high as a person with the hydrophone stuck on the top. And then we've got some more flotation on a floating rope above that, which just makes it easy for us to retrieve. But yeah, a lot of work's been put into making all that software robust, and then all the electronic hardware robust as well, so that we don't get, we don't blow fuses and things like that. Then there's the mechanical robustness of it as well. It's all sort of held together with screws and all bolted down, like the batteries are held down to within an inch of their lives.
And then there's the challenge of getting the recording rig into position in the Southern Ocean, near Antarctica. You can't just make a day trip out to these field sites. Brian Miller.
So we had three recording sites off East Antarctica, and these recording sites are located along the annual resupply routes for Australia's Antarctic stations. Because the most expensive part of this entire operation is actually getting the instrument to that location, we deploy our instruments along these resupply routes.
So how do you actually get a rig that's, as tall as a human being to the bottom of the ocean?
A big weight, that's the short answer. So we use what are basically dumbbell weights made of iron. They're on the bottom of the rig. If you imagine this, a great big long mooring over all the things, probably 30 metres long with all the ropes and things included. But on the very bottom is a weight that holds the whole thing down, about 250 kilos. And so that pulls the whole system to the bottom, and the system's relatively streamlined. It's one long string, so it goes all the way to the bottom of the ocean. It travels at about 2 metres a second on the way down. This is deep water in the Southern Ocean below the Antarctic convergence, so it's very close to 0 degrees year round.
Wow.
Yeah, it's normally between 0 and half a degree.
So I'm trying to imagine the environment that this rig sits in. Does any light penetrate to that depth?
No, absolutely none. So very, very dark. If there were light, you might be able to see a little bit of marine snow falling.
Ooh, what does that mean, marine snow?
Sorry. Marine snow is just a term that's used for all that falls out of the ocean. So you've got all this life living in the ocean in the 2.7 kilometres above this device, and it's doing what it does and shedding skin and excreting all sorts of things. And that tends to coagulate and fall to the bottom. So when you're on the bottom of deep water, particularly in the Southern Ocean, it seems, you get this so-called marine snow that sort of is just a continual fall of stuff out of the ocean.
In among the detritus, fluttering towards the bottom, in complete darkness, in the depths of the ocean near Antarctica, the microphones are listening to one of the biggest predators on Earth. But they don't make those stereotypical whale moans that you might be thinking about. Dr. Brian Miller, then Dr. Eleanor Miller.
Sperm whales make four different types of sounds. We categorize them based on the rate at which these sounds repeat. Essentially, they're all variations on a click.
They make these really consistent, regular clicks, which are echolocation clicks, that they use to hunt, and they make them once every second for at least 80% of their dive. Almost like a metronome.
The biggest metronome in the world.
Yeah. Yes.
And this is their typical behavior, so we call these clicks usual clicks. A click is an effective noise to make for echolocation. It has a very sharp onset. It has a very clear reflection. It covers a wide range of frequencies, and that can give you information about the size and shape of an object.
So does that mean then that sperm whales will hunt?
Yes, they do. And sperm whales mainly eat squid, and they also eat other things such as fish and octopus.
The echolocation works very much the same way that fish finders on boats work. They're sending out a pulse of sound, and they're listening for those reflections. The reflections tell them not just how far away the animal is, but the quality of the sound that's reflected also can give them ideas about whether or not the object they're echolocating at is hard or soft, whether it's a squid or a fish, or possibly another whale. They get a 3D sense and can actually look inside solid objects with sound as well. The usual clicks are produced during the search phase of foraging. So as soon as the whale flukes up and puts his tail in the air and starts to dive, they might start to produce these usual clicks. The rate at which they're repeated is related to the distance between the whale and its prey. So the creaks are produced in the final phase of echolocation, when the whale is very close and wants almost continuous feedback on the location of that prey.
This is the sound of a huge male sperm whale zoning in on its prey. It's a chase. How big are the prey that they're going for, roughly?
I believe they can be quite big. They're known to hunt giant squid, so I'm not sure they have much of a limit on that.
Oh, that's so incredible. Imagine what the echo, I suppose, off a giant squid must sound like. Can you hear the echoes, or can you just hear the original signal itself?
We can detect the echoes as well. We're able to distinguish between the original click and the echo.
This is a sperm whale making clicks with the echoes rebounding back from the surface of the water.
And they make a variety of other noises too. They can also actually be used to inform about their behavior. So they make these slow clicks, which are like regular clicks, but at longer time intervals. And they tend to make these when they're coming up to the surface to breathe.
Another sound that sperm whales have been recorded making in other parts are called codas. These are little sequences of clicks that sound a little bit like this. But as yet, the Antarctic Division hasn't identified any codas in the Southern Ocean. But really, even if the whales were singing four-part harmony, it wouldn't matter a jot if the scientists couldn't retrieve the recordings from the bottom of the ocean.
The amount of data that we collect on these instruments is so large that we can't send it over a satellite link. We have to be able to actually physically recover the data so that we can download it and analyze it. At the very first site that we tried these new instruments that the AED developed, and we got unlucky with this instrument. We deployed it, it recorded for its 11 months, but when we went to pick it up, there was sea ice, it was completely covered, and we just couldn't get to it. The following year, the same thing happened. It took 4 years before the ice finally cleared from that site. Nevertheless, 4 years later, they pinged the instrument, they told it to come to the surface, and it did.
Mark Milnes is one of the engineers at the Antarctic Division who designed this incredible audio recording mooring. Tell me how you retrieved them.
It might be useful if I explain the string a little bit. So we'll weight on the bottom, one section of rope up to two devices, which are called acoustic releases. And then above that again is the actual recorder. So what the acoustic releases do is we talk to them from the surface. We communicate with them via an acoustic link. You know, if you think of old dial-up internet, it's that sort of beep, buzz, pop, whir noise, and it's quite long and it gets repeated twice. And when they get the right particular ping, they actually unscrew a little thread and a chain pulls through and the whole thing releases itself from the weight. So the weight stays on the bottom of the ocean and will eventually rust away. It's all iron. And the rest of the device starts floating towards the surface.
This is actually the sound of the ship in the Antarctic as it steams towards the rig. And this is the sound of the mooring rising to the surface. The hydrophones are incredibly sensitive, so the water touching them in this way makes a really big sound. I'm totally imagining just a huge shepherd's crook to hoik it out of the water, but I'm sure that it's more delicate than that.
It's pretty close to that. If the weather's good, we've launched what they call a fast recovery vehicle, so actually a small boat goes out and actually pulls it on board. In bad weather, we've actually got an air-assisted grapple gun that we can fire and shoot a grappling line across it from a distance. So,
wow.
Yeah, there's a few options. The hectic bit is when you get the device back and you pull it apart and you're just hoping that it's actually worked and that there's recorded data on there.
And from these acoustic moorings, there has been a lot of noise. Eleanor Miller.
Since 2013, we've recorded over 46,000 hours of acoustic data.
Whoa.
Yeah, so just listening for 24 hours a day, it would take over 5 years to listen to all of the data. So we developed a computer algorithm to help us detect the clicks automatically so we wouldn't have to sit there listening to that many hours of data.
No computer algorithm is ever completely foolproof, though, and yeah. I'm assuming that there were some false positives. What sort of things triggered the algorithm that sounded sort of like a sperm whale?
We actually find it most often triggered falsely on ice noise, which we recorded quite a lot of. Ice makes lots of cracking noises, which can sound quite a lot like sperm whale clicking to a computer.
That's an amazing thing to be sitting listening to in an office, isn't it?
Yeah.
The ice cracking in Antarctica.
Yeah, you just picture it forming and melting and it's like another world.
Is it possible to confuse the sounds of sperm whales with any other type of marine mammal?
No. In terms of the computer, it sometimes picked up minke whale sounds, which make really short blips that to a computer might look like a sperm whale click. The human listening to the recording, you can easily distinguish the two.
Did you pick up any noises that you just didn't know what they were?
Yeah, you never know quite what you're going to hear. And some of the most amazing noises for me were a lot of the seals. We picked up a lot of leopard seals and crab-eater seals especially. Some of the noises they make are amazing. They almost sound like they're from another planet.
The scientists at the Antarctic Division are using sounds to study all sorts of animals that we have barely ever heard of, let alone heard from. They've found out a lot about sperm whales by analysing their clicks.
It turns out that just simply listening continuously day in, day out, at fixed locations can provide a tremendous amount of information about the behavior of these animals. We learned about the seasonality of these animals. And it turns out in the Antarctic, the sperm whales are really predominantly present in the summer and autumn, and they're not found in the heavy sea ice in the winter. You know, it could be that they don't like the ice. It could be that their prey is less accessible when the sea is covered in ice. They have to get to the surface to breathe. And, you know, perhaps they don't want to be using their large, precision-tuned head to be breaking ice. You know, it's got a separate purpose, which is to help them echolocate. And so perhaps it's not very comfortable for them to be pushing ice with their head. We've been able to look at the daily behavior of these animals, and we found that they're not clicking during night. Almost all of it has been detected during the day. And even when you account for the fact that days are very long in the Antarctic summer, even during those short night periods, you're really, really unlikely to find sperm whales echolocating. It's a really curious result because in other parts of the world, they have found the opposite trend. They found that sperm whales click more at night in more temperate latitudes. So it's very likely that this change in their behavior throughout the daily cycle is related to the availability of their food. It's believed that krill migrate from the depths to the surface on a daily cycle. Sperm whales don't eat krill, but they may eat animals that prey on krill. So if you've got various links in the food chain are all following some sort of daily cycle, then it's not perhaps too surprising to think that the sperm whales may be taking advantage of that.
I mean, do whales sleep?
They do. I've actually seen a few sleeping at the surface. They come up and breathe really slowly and just lie there. It's called logging.
Oh my God, imagine what a sperm whale dream would be like. They'd be dreaming of the most juicy squid possible or something.
Yeah, they'd probably, would they dream in echolocation clicks, or would it be a visual like we have? So it's an interesting thought. It's one of the best parts of the job, actually. Being able to take a year's worth of recording from such a remote region, knowing that there could be new things on there that nobody has ever heard before, ever, and getting to listen to that and explore it, it really does feel like frontier science. It feels like we're really exploring.
Almost all the marine sounds recorded in today's program were supplied by Dr. Brian Miller via the Australian Antarctic Division. I'm Anne Jones, and this is Off Track, where nature gets delivered to your eardrums every week. And if you like what you hear, you can subscribe to this show and listen to more of Australian Nature wherever you want to, because this program is available as a free podcast. Remember to meet me right here at the same time next time. That's when I'll take you somewhere else.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.